Welcome to the Detail Solutions Podcast. My name is Alex Russell, and I am your host. Jason, how you doing, buddy? You're here.
I'm good. I'm here. I didn't want to miss this one.
You really got deleted. To be a part of this. You got deleted off the other one, so you had to fill your your quota by getting in on this one, right?
I had to get in on it, man.
Yeah. All right, the DetailSolutionsPodcast.com. That is our website. That's where you're going to find all the links to the show. If you're watching this on YouTube and you don't know that we have a podcast, then that's where you want to go. We also have our preferred vendors on there, and that's basically just our ad partners that's going to have a link to click you right to their site. It's also going to have the codes that'll save you money. So if you go and spend money with our ad partners, make sure you use their codes so that they know that you're spending money with us, and then they'll give us money and then we give you the funny. So hashtag money, money, funny. That's how that works, right? We also have the merch store for the podcast apparel. We do have the Concaster t-shirt. We have the headphone style microphone podcast logo on t-shirts, hoodie, and then we also have the banner style embroidered flat bill hat. You can go check out there. Again, we do stream these on YouTube. YouTube is the Detail Solutions Podcast. You can watch us live when we do these Q&As or when we do the what's on your minds. So make sure that you go like, share, subscribe, follow, hit the notification bell so that you get the notification when we are live. MTE is just 2 weeks away. Maddie's having lighting issues. MTE is just 2 weeks away. If you're last minute, like Brenda Mortensen called me up today and she's like, hey, I think I'm coming to MTE. What do I got to do? You're going to want to go to mobiletechexpo.com. And they're going to have there where you can purchase your tickets. Use the code DSB15. You'll save 15% off. And then while you're there, also go to mobiletechexpo.com /golden-mic or golden-mic. And make sure to give us a nod for the Golden Mic Award. It's not gone off of number of votes. It is off of the best representation of the show or the best what's the word I want to use? The best, help me out here, Jason. What am I trying to think of?
Influence.
Sure. Yeah. Influence. It's not the word I was thinking impact. Of, but yeah. How the show impacts you or how the show influences you or whatever. And then again, anywhere that you follow us on social media, whether it's Instagram, the Detail Solutions Podcast, Maddie's making all the noise in the world.
Sorry, guys. I'm an amateur.
You're good. Thank God. or on Facebook, or even if you follow us over on TikTok at the Detail Solutions Pod, please go make sure that you like, share, subscribe, and so we're gonna jump into this.
I think he already introduced himself.
Yeah. So we've got the birthday boy Matty Gibb on here. For those of you who don't know Matthew Gibb, he's been around. I mean, he's like a dinosaur. He's a fossil. He's been around forever. Knows everybody. I mean, I didn't know him until I heard him on Dale's show. What's Dale's show? I forget. Detailing Down Under podcast.
That's it.
Man, I blanked on it for a minute because he hasn't had an episode out in a couple of weeks. I first heard Maddie on there, and then Maddie and I started keeping in contact, and then the more people I talked to, like, oh yeah, Maddie Gibb. So how you doing, birthday boy?
I'm good, except I keep. I'm very good, but for lighting, being in here, which is where I wanted to be, it's just too damn bright with these curtains and stuff.
Oh, so you're fine.
I'm gonna move over here. Shine, because it's 40 degrees Celsius here today, and it's pretty bright.
Yeah.
So it's pretty hot. Try this.
You're all good.
I normally do it in, like, other areas, but this will do.
Yeah,
that's so fine. All right. Stop making
yeah,
some noise
so,
too.
So you're so for everybody listening and watching. I mean, Maddie and I were supposed to do this a while back. Maddie got pretty sick, was in the hospital for a long time. Every time he got kicked out of the hospital, he missed it so much he went right back in. So we're glad that you're healthy
Well, as healthy as I can be with aplastic anemia, where your immune system likes to take all the platelets out of your bone marrow. It's real nice, you know. Mm. But taking the tablets and obviously doing some other treatments. And yeah, but I got a staph infection on that. There was one day I had to cancel because my platelets were like 2. And I said, oh, I've got some. You get signs of that when you're low. And I was like, I've got to ring up and I've got to go in and get some more. So that buggered that day up. And then I got a staph infection like 2 weeks later after that, something like that. But anyway, I'm healthy now. I'm good.
Well, that's good. Is this something that just like recently happened, or is this something you've been dealing with?
In September, it just showed up. My bottom of my legs on both sides were basically just full of red dots, and basically it's the capillaries all coming to the surface and the blood capillaries, and they just all go red, and then you get low enough to where your like platelets are virtually non-existent, and you end up bleeding everywhere, gums and so platelets have to be given and they go down over time. So I deliberately got two bags on Thursday, so I'd be golden for another week. Okay. So I wouldn't have to cancel again. But anyway, yeah, it's a bit of a bitch, but like I said, there is treatment for it. Stem cells are the best option, and we'll get to that point this year. But yeah, outside of that, I mean, I spent 62 days in hospital feeling fine, but yet internally I was knackered. So
wow.
It's weird. It's a very rare thing. Anyway, let's move on.
Let's get into this. So, you know, obviously, like always, you know, we want to know the where, the when, the why, the how you got into detailing and be as broad with it or as narrow with it, however you want to go with it. Because I know you got
it was exactly 30 years ago to this day, to this day, basically, pretty much. In 93, I bought my first car. It was only a Suzuki Swift, but it was like a three or four year old car. It was like 10 grand. I think I paid like 6 grand cash and paid 4 grand off in a few months or 9 months or something. And that was the end of that. And I said, I want to take care of this thing. Even though it's just my first car, most people's first cars in Australia are like 20 year old shit boxes in most cases, or, you know, but that's how it used to be most of the time. You'd buy something and it was $500 or whatever, and it was, you know, it'd run you around and do all right, and you have to repair stuff. And I thought, I'll get something decent. And it's only a little Suzuki Swift with a carburetor on it, 1.3-litre engine, you know. But I said, I'm going to take care of this thing. So what do I do? Down to the auto parts store. What have we got in Australia at the time? Repo, Armorall, Kitten, Turtle Wax. And basically that was about it, except for Maguire's, which had come to Australia in 91. And it was clearly better than those. So I went down that with a Maguire's red bottle, you know, retail range, which was quite decent for its time. Right. And I used that, and I'd basically clean the car every week or 2 weeks, and I'd clay it, and I would wax it and do the three-step sort of paint treatment system on it that Maguire's had at the time, with the cleanser and then the polish and then the Canuba and all that stuff, like yellow, the gold class yellow or something like that. And then I would put wax on it like every week and just keep putting more and more wax on every damn week and go stupid. And then basically that was it. It was like, okay, I'll do this. And then sort of did that for a year or two, and I kept the car really nice. It was only a white one, kept it really nice. And then a year later, I met this guy. I've forgotten what his first name was, actually. It's been that many years. But his business name was Gawler Mobile Car Clean. And he basically came out to my dad's company, and he would clean all the work vehicles, staff cars and all that, every 2 weeks. And I started asking him questions, watching him do stuff. And, yeah, the way he did it back then was a bit primitive. But it got me interested and enthused, because basically at that point I was sort of like, well, at least when I left, from the time I left school to about 92, 93, I really didn't have any idea what I wanted to do as a career. And I just got a job in a supermarket working doing that. Thought I'll start there, just work it out from there. And then the detailing thing sort of bug hit and went from there. And then I just started doing a few friends' cars in 95, 96. A lot of hand polishing. And it just went from there, and it grew and grew and grew. And I was, you know, it wasn't until those sort of like your mid to late 90s I started trying different products. And we went into the things like, the fire glaze era. If you've ever heard of fire glaze and glare and all that.
No.
Now, basically, fire glaze was the original natural silica.
Okay. I
Know, suppose.
Hang on a second, Matt. You're glitching a little bit. Hang on a second.
Ion stuff, which isn't a polymer or a
okay.
pebble wax in it.
Okay.
Basically,
All right, you're back.
I knew I'd get a phone call.
Sorry. Phone call, okay.
basically, fire glaze, yeah, it was this natural silicate ion, supposedly, whatever else, but it would give you a really, really rich color that you wouldn't get with your polymers and your polymer silicanes and your canubas. So I used that, but I'd use that after I'd, remove all the swells and whatever else by hand. And
right.
It worked really well, and it was like a sealant glaze, so it would like enrich color a lot, and then it would leave protection behind. And you put the first time you put it on, you put it on by hand or machine, and you just sort of move it around, rub it in, like using it like a polish, abrasive polish. Then you would put it on
okay.
like a sealant,
kind of like a cleaner wax.
Yeah, but it would basically last a couple of years, and it would really, really like enrich the color, because with silica, even though a lot of silica stuff has to have solvents in it, which can kill your gloss to some degree, it would work really well. So, yeah. So I did that, and then obviously in 90, what have we got here? Like, 2000 was the real year when I basically had the internet finally. A bit behind the times, but finally got the internet, good old dial-up. And basically that was it. Like, here we are, Autopia, researching stuff all the time, talking to people, looking at stuff, just soaking stuff up like a sponge. And starting to learn the rotary then too. Bought myself a rotary. And off I went. Spent ages on there, many years. Learned a lot of stuff from a lot of people. Tried everything they were mentioned, and then do my own sort of come up with my own sort of things. And that was when the world sort of opened up, and I was like, Mike, how many brands are there? Chemical Guys and all Poor Boys World, and then you got your Wolfgangs and all your auto geek brands.
Right.
And I just buy bits and pieces of everything and just try all sorts of stuff. So, and that was where it really took off. Then obviously I started as a pro in 2000 after 6, 7 years of being an absolute rank, sort of amateur
or
rookie.
Let's do an ad real quick, and then we'll come in and talk about you kind of stepping up from the amateur ranks to the pro ranks. So we'll be right back. You need a website, but you don't know where to start? Detailers Roadmap can help. Their websites are designed for detailers and have all the features you need to convert visitors into lifelong customers. It's easy to use, affordable, and they'll even write and design the website from start to finish. So accelerate your auto detailing business's growth and increase online visibility with Detailers Roadmap's bespoke digital marketing services. You'll rank high on search engines and increase PPF, ceramic coating, and tinting sales. Contact Detailers Roadmap today to schedule your free discovery call. And make sure you tell them you heard about it here on the Detail Solutions podcast to receive your discount. All right. So when we left off, you said that's kind of about the time that you decided to do it more on a professional level. So were you just kind of doing – your car, friends and family car, and decided to actually make it a business at that time?
Yeah, well, basically in 2000, it was pretty much learn the rotary as best I could and trial and error, tons of that. And then in 01, I actually finished up working for the supermarket after 10 years and said, okay, I'm going to go into this now. But I wasn't going to start a business. I started out working for a company that had a bunch of vehicles. It was a security company, actually. They just got me to wash the cars regularly and vacuum and do other stuff like that, and just started basically doing maintenance for them. And then I actually did that for a little while and then decided, okay, I'll go to a dealership and I'll just work for a dealership and go from there. So I ended up working for a Mazda dealership shortly after that, and I was there for 4 or 5 years. But basically, yeah, like 01, 02 was a very interesting time. That's when I got introduced to Menzerna. Firstly, I think about 01 or 02. And obviously
And now,
Freckler and Freckler.
how did you get introduced to them, or how did you get introduced to that product?
There was a guy here in Australia from Melbourne that was actually using it, who was a very, 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 very talented detailer. And he actually came over to the dealership one day and actually showed me, you know, with a DA, with a short throw DA at the time, you know, basically how to use this stuff. And I said, yeah, it's great stuff. I was obviously seen it on the forums. So I'd researched it, but then he was using it and he showed me it and came over one day from Melbourne. About 8 hours drive away, and yeah, it was, I was like, wow, that's really good. Because back then it was like, you know, it was in Australia, it was pretty much a lot of people were using the, you know, the Freckler G3. So Men's Earner was sort of like definitely a sort of level above that. And I got into that and I used that for 7 or 8 years. Also actually tried out the PPG System 1 single pulse system as well at that point. But really, 01, 02 was when I actually started embracing rinseless wash technology with the original no rinse. That's when I started using that as well. So I was just buying whatever money I made from City Mazda doing new and used car reconditioning,
right,
and preparation and paint protection and all that stuff for them. I would spend half of it on buying product and supplies to basically sell my cars and do a few mates' cars as well on the side sort of thing. And but actually the one thing I'm actually really proud of is, and I'm not saying I'm the first, I was the first at all, but in 2002 I got rid of the chamois, bought microfiber from the guy that came over to Melbourne, I think it was. He knew these guys, which were known as, I think, Concourse Car Care at the time, now Waxit. Probably the biggest one in Australia as far as supplies go, and got into microfiber. And then the time I actually got microfiber, I said, you know what, I reckon in about 7 or 8 years we're going to be buffing cars with pads made from this material or something like this particular material. And of course 2010, 2011 Maguire's bought it out, but it probably existed by that point in the car plants. Apparently it might have existed by that point. I've been around. Apparently it's been around since 95, 96, maybe even earlier. So I certainly wasn't the first, but to actually think, like, you know, we'll be buffing cars with this, you know, back that far. You know, I might not have been the first to think of that, but certainly I'm pretty proud that I did. I predicted. So, yeah. So that was – and I was at City Mazda until 2005, 6. And I got really annoyed at the fact that at Mazda that they wouldn't listen to me as far as saying, I'd say, like, let's get a brand new red car, like a Mazda 3 or a 6 or something like that, or an RX-7 or an RX-8 when they came out, and let's polish it a bit, not too much, a bit, but make it a bit richer and do some stuff to it, put the sealant glaze on it and all that stuff and make it nice, put it in the showroom and sell it for a few more bucks, maybe with a couple of other little options to make it unique. Nah, not interested. And then it was like, basically, this car is covered in watermarks. This needs to be watermark removal treatment done plus polishing. So I just deliver it in the sunlight so they can't see it or some shit. And I'm like, I can't do that. And that's when I decided to go my own way and start my business. So, and it was a
dealers don't ever spend money because they don't.
They're always really going to be somebody that's going to buy the car regardless.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And they don't,
yeah, I get it to a degree.
The value. Yeah. They don't see the value that they could charge a bit, like you said, charge a bit more, you know, and the dealership's going to make more money on it or whatever. When you left the Mazda place, did you go out on your own, start your own?
Yeah. Business? I went out of mine. And as I said, the stupid thing was, and I'm not very proud. I'm proud of what I did as far as what work quality I delivered. Because I wanted to do nothing but mid-range and high-end. I was not interested in doing work for dealers or anymore or doing your typical sort of production. So I'm not against it, but certainly I wanted to do high-end. And, yeah, that makes it difficult because your market's smaller. My dad was a brilliant business guy and he had his company at the time. You know, and I just went out and said, as long as I make this much a week, I'll be fine. And I didn't have a business plan. I started doing one sort of thing. And I would call myself over the years, I sort of was like, I consider myself that the work I delivered and the customer service I gave was world class. But as a business person, I think I consider myself a bit of a failure because I didn't make a ton of money most of the time. The first few years were really, really hard. I also had a And I had an issue at the time
overworking,
where,
undercharging.
yeah, oh, I didn't undercharge. I mean, back in when I first started, maybe I did, but pretty much I was 1,000, 2 grand, 3 grand a car from 06. So most people, there was no one, hardly anyone else doing that. It was pretty much you want, two stage, three stage correction with like four layers of paint sealant on, basically paint and a couple of layers on glass, and then polish the trim with my own stuff, which I made, which would last years in most cases. It's $1,500, 2 grand, $1,000 minimum. Some services were $500, but that wasn't polishing. And even today, if I was to turn a polisher on now and do a car for somebody, if I ever did, it would be at least a grand. I wouldn't even turn it on without that, And look, I was always high end pricing. I never discounted because I'd rather add value by doing something than actually discount, and then wait for the next discount. But like I said, it was hard, and certainly the first few years were tough. A number of years were tough, and I never really, earned the sort of money that most people did over the years. But the last 5 or 6 years were really, really good. Did really well. The reason why probably that happened is because I was more, I don't know, just so technically minded with all this stuff, and not really into the business side of it as much as I should have been. And I did, and at the time, like for a lot of my, you don't really know, but the car accident I had when I was 6 weeks of age, which I've mentioned in a podcast before, sort of had an effect on me to the point where basically I was, my mental age was always behind my physical age. So it's taken me 30, 40 years to basically get to the point where most people are when they're 25, 26. I was always five, 10 years behind, and I was shy, and I didn't know how to talk to people properly, and all that sort of stuff. And I wouldn't sort of go outside of my typical square of Ford people and Holden guys and try and get European, more European vehicles in and that sort of stuff. But as the years sort of went by, actually, the first serious customer I had was a guy with
Well,
a
hang on,
1984 Porsche.
before you jump into there, let's do an ad break, and I want to ask you something off of what you were talking about before we jump too far forward. So we'll be right back.
If you own a detailing business, you need Car Supplies Warehouse. We offer tested and proven solutions to keep your business running strong. We offer wholesale memberships, in-person training, and the best chemicals, products, and tools all in one place. Go to carsupplieswarehouse.com and use code SOLUTIONS for 15% off. Code is valid for one-time use only. Some restrictions may apply. Go shop now on carsupplieswarehouse.com.
Okay, so before we jump further, I want to go back because you mentioned about the sealant that you were putting on cars that you made yourself.
Yeah.
So how did you do
Yeah, the
that?
trim
And,
stuff.
yeah, so
Well,
did you actually go to like a blender, or were you just like mixing stuff yourself in the garage, or?
pretty much it was mixing myself in the garage. I did by 2010, without going too far forward, by 2010 I actually had found another brand, and which I've been using ever since. Who's actually company is a huge company actually, but what they do for detailing is only 5% of what they do. And found myself a mentor and taught me a lot of chemistry stuff. Doesn't mean I'm a chemist by any means, or I know that much, but he taught me some great stuff that no one else did. But I was tinkering with different stuff as your typical sort of purist enthusiast, full on hardcore sort of enthusiast slash deep, slash pro as well. Yeah, I'd mix paint sealants into car washes and see what that would do. And I just tried everything outside the box. Every product I bought, I'd stick it on stuff that wasn't meant for to see what it would do. And I just did that. And I eventually found that by going with certain liquids, I managed to find the right blend that I could mix of four, five, six different liquids that would basically allow me to machine polish exterior trim on cars that's smooth or semi-textured, not your full textured stuff. And if it was urethane or ABS, acrylic butane styrene, or any of these other sort of polymer monomer, whatever they want to call them, rubber, whatever, most of the ones that are quite smooth and have a very almost a satin finish to them from new, not your dead flat matte ones, I could machine that with a rotary with a 3-inch pad with the first liquid with one pad, the second liquid with a softer pad, and the third liquid with even softer. And you take basically a matte or satin or semi-satin piece of trim to basically look like piano black. And it would be like that for like year, 2 years, 3 years. And in some cases, if you machined it on with a rotary, you'd on some materials, it would last you ages. Like I did the rear spoiler on my Falcon. Well, my Falcon has two spoilers. It's got the bottom and the top, and it actually creates a little bit of downforce of like 120 plus k's an hour. And the top part's not painted. And whatever material is, it was this dead flat gray. It had no gloss. So I machined that. And that actually has stayed that way for like 16 years or something.
Oh, wow.
It just hasn't faded. And even all the trim I've done on my car, I've machined. I've been machining on, the liquid can go on paint as well and actually polish paint to some degree. And by going over it, creating a bit of temperature, you actually bonded it on to the point where all the rubber seals around the car's windows, which you don't have on modern cars now, they just went jet black and they've just never faded. They just never have.
That's crazy.
Because I said to myself, even back in 06, 07, like dressings are good. They've got their place, but most of them just burn off. Like there's got to be a better option. So that's where I sort of come up with my sort of trim dream formula, as I called it. And I've never sold it, never marketed it really. Just mix it up myself. And I haven't done it for a number of years now as far as mixing it up or anything like that, because you've got coatings now and you've got dyes and all that stuff. You don't really need it most of the time. So
well, if it's lasting as long as you say it is, I mean, why not?
It's because it's not technically my own blend exactly. Like, it's not like I've gone to a place and I can say, make me this. So, and I always wanted something with my business. I always wanted to offer what others couldn't offer and what they didn't offer. Got to have something that they can't offer. So I've had customers say to me, oh, I've got a Subaru Legacy or WRX, and it's got this sort of semi-textured trim on the bottom of the doors, and it's flat matte. Can you make it jet black? And I just machine it for like an hour each side, and it would just come up like, piano black, basically. And even if it had texture or peel look to it, it was jet black.
Wow.
And the reason why it lasts is because it doesn't have, it doesn't have polymer silicon or carnival wax or even typical ingredients in it. But I just, it's at a point now where pretty much there's other stuff on the market to where it's sort of, it's almost obsolete. And on some materials, it won't last as long as it does on others.
Right.
But if it doesn't.
Yeah, most newer cars these days don't really have a lot of that trim on it to probably even need much.
No, that's right. I mean, besides wiper blade arms, which you can do and make them dark as hell and glossy like a mirror, I mean, they will fade just the way, because of the way the materials, they'll fade a little bit. But all you need is a bit of the step three and black foam and just rub it over it again by hand. It'll bring it back and hold it in. But yeah, I did that. But anyway, one of the most interesting times was 2006-07 was when I bought a Metabo SXE450 TurboTech, which was basically a DA random orbital sander, but it was dual orbit. And I thought, that's interesting, because I was using a Makita BO6040 or 30 at the time, which was just 3 mil orbit, and it vibrated like mad, and it wasn't that great. One of those top-down ones with the handle, and your sort of typical sort of cheap sander. Yep. So this thing was way more powerful. It had, I think it went up to like 12,000 orbits per minute. And it had 2.5 mil orbit and 6.25. And all we had to do was push the button and turn the plate, and it changed from 2.5 to 6. And I put a nylon washer in there for like 20 cents, and it made it spin. It wouldn't spin at all, like speed one at all. So I just put a washer mod in it, like Kevin Brown style.
Yeah.
And basically, yeah. And at that point, I thought the future of DA polishing is dual or variable orbit, where you have 3 to 5 orbits or 6 orbits. And I tried to get that happening by talking to manufacturers in Europe via email, a few phone calls, and whatever. And they all said, all you need is a rotary. We're not interested, blah, blah, blah. Or they didn't reply at all. And in 2010, 11, 12, we could have had potentially could have had a variable orbit machine by that point.
Right.
So I knew that was where the future was.
Wow.
And, it was just like, why aren't you interested? Why are there still today not that many manufacturers interested in making machines that I wanted to make? I've got one that I've talked to a manufacturer about that's well known. They've taken it on board. Which will be all I can say is I can't say exactly how basically it what it is exactly and what makes it unique. And it's it's a very, very good evolution, but it's not a revolution. But it's basically a dual mode machine. So you've got both modes, but it does something very unique.
Oh, cool.
Does something different. And they're working on it.
While you're talking about machines, I know you and I have had this conversation, and I know Jason will want to do this, hear this. What's your thoughts on the new machine that direct pumps the product into the pad?
You don't have to. Look, I've always had the idea, always had the thought that I did want that. But the way the Super Shiner works, it's still to this day too clunky and too heavy, I think.
Yeah.
And the trouble is, you know, I've always thought it was a good idea, but it's to actually implement it where you're not got this added weight to the machine, and how do you do it without, you know, it's a good idea, and it'd be nice to have. Yeah. Because I don't really like the way that virtually all polish bottles are actually done, where you've got the bottle at the top. It should be fill it from the top and then empty it from the bottom. But with different viscosities of polishes, thin, runny, you know, spray on, thick, you've got to have different silicon valves for each one of those FIFO bottles. Otherwise, it'll piss all out the bottom of the bottle. There's right, no cap.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought it'd be a good idea to go through the machine, and with obviously wet polishes, it comes through. Like the hose line comes through and it goes through the center, like a water hole in the backing plate. But
right.
I mean, it's a good concept. And the 2024 model that this guy has done or will be doing is better. But then it comes down to, well, does he supply the machines and how good are his machines? Or is it just stick it on top? But even then, it's still too sort of weighty and clunky to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't really know how you can probably do it. And is it really worth the effort? You know,
and my concern with it is, you know, how do you keep the pad from, you know, getting oversaturated with
bingo,
you know?
Yeah, destroy that pad in like just a few passes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, what about if you're pumping it through with a new pad and you've done that and you're using the pad washer and you're doing all cleaning it all the time, and then you leave it and the line gets clogged up and it doesn't want to come out anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so I'm not saying it's
go wrong.
Oh,
I think it's ahead of its time. I think it's a machine that definitely ahead of its time, and that with, you know, more time given into that thought, it'll just get better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I've got to get the white down.
Years, I think.
Yeah. I think it would be cooler if there was a way to load your product into the actual machine, like a cartridge or something, so it's not like a big bottle sitting on top. Listen, I'm already worried that Dean and Nick, or not Dean, sorry, Dean's calling me, Dylan and Nick were gonna steal my idea when I was talking to them at MTE about Rupus, and I told him, I said, you know, it'd be really cool if you guys put a little leveling bubble on the machine, so you know if you're, you know, pushing too far down on the handle,
angled,
you're tilting it or angling it or something, and they both were kind of like, oh, we would never do that. And I said, well, I'm gonna go put one on my machine and take a picture of it now, just in case you guys show up to SEMA in 2024 with a leveling bubble.
Yeah. Well, with all the people, the few people that I actually have done training sessions with, and I'm gonna be doing a lot more of that this year, and I wanted to start. I'm working on a program to do some seriously deep, you know, like group training and one-on-one eventually, sometime this year. And then probably even more the year after that. And I'm not saying I'm a great trainer, but there's a lot of stuff I want to teach and want to pass on.
Yeah.
But it's a good idea, because I've watched a lot of people over the years that I've sort of met that are detailers. Well, not met too many detailers, but people that were, well, the detailers, they're fairly new, and I've been, you know, doing some classes with them, and you watch them, and the amount of times that they're always fractionally tilting is actually quite a lot.
Yeah.
Even sometimes I've gone, and I look at them, looking, oops, I'm tilting a bit, fraction this much.
Yep.
And with rotary, it's like, not so bad.
You tilt side to side, or you lean back on it too much. Yeah, I mean, I watched some friends who, you know, they're doing it, and I'm just like, dude, you're leaning, you're tilting it too much on the back end. You know, you got to flatten out your pad, and you know, so that was my idea. So Rupes, if you take it, just, you know, kick
royalties,
me back.
Royalties, baby.
Yeah, kick me back a couple sandwiches every now and then or something.
And I had, and here's another thing. I had contacted Rupes before. about, and Dylan knew about it, and Jason knew about it, I think, about making a mini version of a force rotation and random orbital machine, like a 3-inch version. It's force and random. Everything that's force rotation should have random as well,
right?
In my view. And I called it the Cinquecento, which is Italian for 500 watts, or was it, because Miele is 1,000, Cinquecento is 500. Right. I thought, little 500 watt, even maybe smaller than that, 400 watt, you know, 3-inch force rotation, because if I'm using force rotation, yes, I can use 5-inch pads, I can use 6-inch pads, I can use 7-inch, but I always like, the certain places, sometimes you just need a 3-inch. And I mean, there's a lot of people that can actually do it without that, but I just, when I first started, I did everything with an 8-inch pad.
Right.
Everywhere. Right. Oh, yeah. But I wouldn't do it now. I wouldn't because
that's all there was rotaries with 8-inch pads. Right. It didn't have
7-inch. Well, there were 6-inches, 7-inch, but an 8-inch, but that was the thing. And it's like, I just don't want to be random orbital large throwing an area after I force rotation 5-6 mil. Does it give it a different look? Is it going to change how the 3-inch area is going to look different to the rest of it because it's different throw and different machine action? You know, it maybe not. There are little subtle differences, but it's like, what if there is? So I want to use force 3-inch and force 6-inch, or 5-inch and 6-inch. They've done nothing with it. And I even mentioned about doing like an anniversary model in 2021 for like 10 years of Bigfoot doing a Mark IV, brushless motors, all that stuff. That's still got to happen. But anyway, like I said,
Let's just jump into another commercial real quick, and then we'll come back and jump into what you want to go
through. Into Dyna Braids and coatings and stuff.
Yeah. Where are we at? What have we done? Sorry. We did Details Roadmap and we did Car Supplies Warehouse, right?
Yep.
Oh, here we go.
Now is your chance to try Oberg's new rinseless wash and quick detailer. Additionally, you can save 15% by using coupon code DSP, all capital letters. This hyperconcentrate can be diluted down for a rinseless wash and a quick detailer. It serves excellent as a clay bar lubricant and truly smells incredible. To find out more, please visit oberkarcare.com.
All right. Sorry about the little brain fart. I was looking at our time and I was like, wait, how many episodes or how many commercials have I done or whatever?
So basically we're at sort of 07 08 09, and that's when I started with coatings. I was first coating I ever brought in was the G-Technique C1, which was the crystal lacquer, which if you made a mistake with that was on and it dripped down a window, it was basically like having dried tree sap on the window and you got to chisel it off. It was good gear back at the it was full on. And I actually got to know Robert Earle a little bit, and Drew Gill, I think, was the guy that started G-Technique. And I'd started with that before there was even an importer, a distributor here for it. And not that, you know, there's been people that have been using coatings like Nyalic industrial coating, which I've seen way back in the 90s and early 2000s and all the early, you know, early ones. I think Rennie's probably been using coating since 98 or 2000 minimum. So I'm certainly not the first, but I've always sort of been en masse, I've been in that sort of top 5% that's sort of been looking at what's next and getting it. So got into that and the C1, and eventually we started getting it, I think, in 500 mil bottles, about $2,500 at the time. And the boss was like, I was actually, in 2010 onwards, I started working for a company part-time called Splash Car Wash, which was a high-end car wash in the Adelaide, near the Adelaide Hills, which was, you know, your Bentleys, your Porsches, your Ferraris, all that sort of cars would come in. We had a detail center there. We'd have three staff and be me and two other guys polishing these cars. Lexus of Adelaide, actually, were the only dealership I know of that actually would pay us $300 or $400 to, like, put a coating or a sealant on, probably most of it was a coating on their cars when they were brand new, put them out in the lot. And then when they actually got sold, the customer would pay to have us remove it, fix anything up, any swells or whatever, and then put the coating on. So, and then we got to do a LFA, the second LFA in Adelaide, I think, the black one.
Oh, wow.
Way nice. Back then, yeah, that was pretty cool. Paint, man, the paint was soft on that thing when it came into, like it was so fresh. Yeah. But, and then, of course, obviously 2008, 7, 8, 9, thanks to Barry Thiel with his videos on YouTube, I saw the Donna Braid long throw units, which you may know of, you may know, not may not, which were basically...
I've heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, the aluminium sort of, you know, head that you stick on a rotary or a grinder.
Yeah.
With 19 mil orbit with locked mode and or offset mode as offset rotary, as Kevin calls it, basically, which like a locked mode where a pin locked it in place. So it was like having a rotary with 19 mil orbit. And right. Boy, would that remove some defects. So, yeah, I got into those, bought a few of those, got the Australian version with the 14 mil thread, and I used those up until 2016-17 because the sheer power that machines I combined it with did, as I've mentioned in other podcasts before, with the Flex L3406 with 1,500 watts of power, 35 newton meters of torque to where you couldn't bog it down with your entire body weight. And you run it at like speed 2 or 3, and the machine only weighed 2.1 kilo. So it was light as anything. But yeah, 2010, I actually found denim pads and velvet pads from that company Osrin in Malaysia. Yeah. And they've been probably using them since the 80s. And I got into those and started playing around with those.
The orange peel removal pads.
Yeah.
What did you use the velvet for? I know you're denim and stuff, but.
Well, the velvet one is like three sort of classes, like the 3000 grit. Slightly less aggressive, and the denim's a bit more aggressive again. And I found the velvet to be a bit better for. And again, I mean, I haven't used them that much for a number of years now, but I tried out their liquids, and their liquids were a bit at the time. Yeah, they would correct and level like mad, but they were scary and they stunk like, you know, they stunk a bit like petroleum. But they would do the job. But I switched out to what I was using at the time, which I'm still using today, single polish systems. So one each, one liquid. You know, to correct and finish basically for hard paint, one for medium, one for soft, or you can mix them all together, you know, and do different things. And yeah, basically did that. I think I even told Todd Cooper about it once and sent him a couple of pads, I think, at one point. I think.
Oh, wow.
And it was actually quite interesting that in 2014, when I had my first interview with a podcast with Jimbo, he'd never heard of them. I figured everyone's heard of these, you know. You know, but I hadn't. But So
I think the first pretty much, one I got, Corey gave me one over at Sky's the Limit, and I think that was back in 2016, maybe 2017. But I didn't really know how to use it, so I never used it, and ended up just pitching it one day because I was like, I've never used this thing, I'll just throw it away.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, well, they certainly can create some damage if you get them.
Yeah.
If you get those hot, well, you get the panel hot using them, they'll be friggin' steaming as well as the panel. Yeah. So, you got to watch them. Yeah, you got to watch them. And you can put pretty deep scour marks in there if you actually – it starts – like all your lubrication of your compounds and polishes, whatever, dry out. All of a sudden, you can put these big ring marks in them.
Yeah, and it dries out the compound pretty quickly, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you can, And what I've found from my experience, even with the single polish systems, which take long, it's more of a progressive cut because, you know, the way they work, it takes longer to get the actual the peel down to where you want it, but it actually doesn't, it makes the pads actually finish out much better to the point where a couple of times on medium hardness paint, I didn't have any holograms at all with a rotary doing it.
Oh, wow.
Whereas when they were showing how to do it, it was like first step, scours the shit out of it. Second step, you get the wool out and you do that and clean it up. Then you clean up with the foam. Whereas I was like, one step, it's hologram free on some paints. Other times it's slightly marred. And the second pad, bang, you're done. So it cost me a bit more time to get the initial peel level down to the way I wanted it. But then you didn't have all this crap to fix because of the way the technology of the abrasives work. They're not, you know, sharply faced and food grade abrasives and teary and scary. But what I find is if you keep those damn things clean, spray them with liquid, you know, blow them with compressed air, or keep doing it and not letting them build up with all this white, cakey residue, they will work, they will finish out better than if you just keep putting stuff on, like anything. You know, so, So where are we? So about 2012, 11, 12, I actually found a company in the UK. I started buying pads from them called Flexi Pads. Uh-huh. They're still around. They have a few different pads I like. Not as many now as they did have. But started using, obviously, I was actually started using these sort of Asian style DA wall pads on a DA, which were, they had these ones, what was it called? It was like a New Zealand superfine grade wall on a very thin, very thin pile. You know, basically, it looked like a microfiber pad, but it was wool.
Right.
And I started using those, and of course, they became more popular as well over the years, to where we've got all the different versions now and all that sort of stuff, and buying pads and everything else like that. And then I went to the US in 2013, met this guy. Well, this guy stalked me on, I think, on a forum, I reckon, at one point in 07. We started talking and that, and he said 4 or 5 years later, he goes, "Come on over to the States and give me a hand." You know, setting up my thing in the US, and went over there, and it was like half holiday, half work trip sort of thing. And I was there for 3 months in beautiful Boise, Idaho, and then we went off to a few other states on holiday for a few weeks or whatever. And that was an eye-opening trip, I can tell you. It was amazing. And went back again. Sorry, 2010 I did that, and then 2013 I went back again. And we went across 7 states in a Dodge Magnum. But
basically, the old Dodge Magnum, man. Jeez.
I saw
one of those the other day, and I was like, "Wow, who still has a Dodge Magnum?"
Like, bro, I've got Magnum all day, yo.
Mate, freaking V8 all the way across, you know, Utah, Colorado, Kansas, and all the way through to Texas to Dallas. Dallas too, which is Dallas. But
I'm surprised, honestly, that they never come back out with it and made it a Hemi version. Because not a Hemi version, like a Hellcat version. Because
next, I'll tell you something.
Yeah, because it kind of was like the first Hemi, you know, car, like in the re era, you know, of the 2000s or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Matt, hang on a second, Matt. Let's jump into another commercial real quick, and then I'll let you finish. All right, we'll be right back.
Still sitting on a bucket or poorly built shop stool? Aren't you tired of the discomfort and back pain caused by your lousy shop stool? The days of tiny casters and thin seats are over. Meet the Viper Chair, America's number one shop chair, made right here in the USA. The Viper Chair glides over any surface and loose debris with 4-inch industrial-grade casters. Relieve your lower back pain with the perfectly angled backrest. Prevent tipping and improve posture with a wide, sturdy base. Viper Chairs are designed for every industry: automotive, detailing, welding, or any other project in your garage, no matter what you love to do. With an artillery of accessories, Viper is here to help you with whatever the job requires. Stop wasting your money buying cheap China-made shop stools and get yourself a Viper chair, handcrafted right here in America. Visit ViperIndustrial.com now for our $50 site-wide sale. But hurry, this sale ends soon. Shop ViperIndustrial.com. That's ViperIndustrial.com.
And don't forget to use the code DSP25, and you'll save an additional 25% off.
Stack them. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So, yeah. So, basically, where are we? 2010, 2011, 12?
Yeah, you're talking about FlexiPad?
The FlexiPads in the UK. They would say to me, like, okay, look, we'll do if you buy a grand's worth, we'll do free shipping, free email, 3 or 4 days. And then give you a bit of a discount on each pad. And, you know, I'd buy their microfiber pads, and I'd buy their DA walls.
Right.
And they also had this pad that's called an ivory pad that was in the Arbuff line, and also in a regular, which was like a rotary waffle style and normal flat pad. Then they came out with a DA version later. But this ivory pad was like 110 pull per inch, and it was like on a rotary at low speed with a finishing polish. You know, it was like, oh, man, the gloss level. It was insane. So I bought off of them for a long time. But then in 2013, 14, I said, all right, I said, pad prices are, you know, here, a little bit out of control. And I don't chew through pads. My pads last me ages. I've got some pads I haven't used for a fair number of years, of course, but have lasted me, you know, 20 years, and they still looked almost new. Most pads, I get 100 cars out of them. In most cases. And I said, I'm going to go and do a worldwide search, and I'm going to find a foam manufacturer that buy direct from out of Europe, because Europe has all the best, you know, pre-polymer where you close and open cell foam. And some companies wouldn't deal with me. Rectocell wouldn't deal with me, which is a Belgian company. They wouldn't convert them and wouldn't sell them to me in a lower quantity than they're used to, because most of those companies are pretty much, you know, people are buying 50,000 a year or something like that. all these paint plants. And but I found one out of Europe, actually, in Europe, that was Eastern Europe. So it was on. And they said, yeah, sure, like, you know, we'll send you some samples. Here's some free stuff. Try them out. And they only had, and their main thing was they supply tack rags and robot covers and other stuff like that to, you know, all the European car manufacturers, paint plants.
Okay.
And pads and stuff. And they only had a small range of pads, but I tried this blue one and this white one. And they said these last twice as long as the average pad. And this blue one's designed to be used at high speed or low speed and last ages and finish out. And basically you can do intermediate, you know, light cutting, heavy polishing and semi-finishing or finishing almost. So I tried these pads, loved them, ordered 300 of them. I think I ordered 100 of them at the time. Then I ordered 300 later. And I would just cycle through sets of them. So your heat cycles counts would be very low. Kept them clean. And yeah, basically that's basically what you now know as sort of your blue SDO, HDO, pretty much. Well, at least they SDO anyway. I mean, if it's not the same foam, it's bloody, it's so close, it's not funny. Yeah. And I love that foam pad. I love that foam. It's just, it's got tiny little cells, so the smaller the cells are, usually the better the foam will finish in most cases. And I just love that foam. And the white foam is actually today sold by another company as that's a very, very durable cutting pad that lasts twice as long as the average pad. And it's very, very good. So, yeah, and they've been sending me stuff for some samples of their newer stuff they do. They don't do a lot of pads, and most of the industry doesn't know about them because they don't supply to really our industry that much. They're more about, you know, your OEM paint plants. But, yeah, I started doing that. And this is the thing about going into pad pricing. I understand with pad pricing in the US, it's pretty decent. And in Australia, in most cases, there's pads for $10, there's pads for $15, $20, and some of them they go $25, $35, like the microfibers these days. But these guys were saying to me, righto, you're going to buy 300 or 500 of these pads. Okay, each one of these pads in 5-inch or whatever size you want, whatever edge profile you want, they had 8 different edge profiles you could have, silicone, cone, rounded edge, UFO, like a beveled edge, whatever you want, right? And it's €1 to €2 a piece for a pad. So by the time they got here with shipping, it was like $4 a pad.
Wow.
And that tells you something about what foam really does cost. And there's a lot of technology to foam, but once I went and said, well, shit, like, you know, I understand that people buy, suppliers will buy from companies and they've got to make their money and they've got to make theirs on top of that. And some of the time, yes, it's going to be $10, $15, $20. But when they start going to being $14 for a 3.5-inch pad or 20, you know, or 11, 12, 13, 14 bucks for 3-inch, which you can just punch out yourself if you want, which I can, or, you know, well over 20 at least, well over 20 into the 30, you start going, at least with foam. Microfiber might be more expensive and that's why, you know, it costs what it does. But, I mean – even today, if I ordered 1,000 of them, which I probably could do, it probably only cost me $3,000 or $4,000, and it'd probably be €2.8 a piece, maybe even less than that because I bought 1,000, not 300. So I'm not saying everyone should go out there and sell jet pads cheap, but that's what foam sort of. And imagine what you'd get if you bought 20 or 30,000 of them if you were a paint plant place.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I remember when I first, you know, kind of got into this and was buying stuff through Corey at Sky's the Limit. Cause again, he's so,
I like him.
And I remember he had a Scholl's spider cut pad that was like 30 bucks.
Love him.
And I was like, 30 bucks for one pad. I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
they are expensive. I've spoken to Andreas at Scholl before. Uh-huh. I speak to everybody. I'll talk to all sorts of people, and probably drive some people nuts, but I talk to all sorts of people. But I have talked to email backwards and forwards with Andreas at Scholl Concepts. I'm not a huge fan of their liquids that much, but I've got to admit, I do love that gold spider or the honey spider pad. That is a killer pad. I've got one of them, only one of them, because they are $30 here. They are freaked. They're a bloody, on a random orbital, they're a bloody good pad.
Yeah, I never bought one to try it because I was like, that's way too rich.
Oh, dude, you gotta try it.
Especially when I was just starting out, you know, I was like, I can't afford
this.
Oh,
fair enough.
They are
expensive. They are. Yeah. But man, it's a good pad because it's basically like having a finishing pad that can have the cutting abilities maybe of a white traditional Lake Country CCS paddle.
Right.
Now, it's got some bite, and this what you do with the spider design with the little squares, it creates more surface area, which means you can get more cutting, that sort of thing, and it can also hold in more residue and bury it down and all that stuff. Yeah. And I've found on gear driven, I've had a couple of times where that pad's marred a bit because of with that action, but that could be just me. But on a random, it's just or a rotary, it's fantastic, and it's a great pad. It really is a great pad.
Yeah.
So, but yes, they are Showa expensive, but it's a good pad.
Yeah.
And they're durable. So.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You know, most Rupes pads are in that $15-16 range, and there's a few that are, you know, maybe $17-18. But you know, over here, for the most part, I mean, you can get a really good. You know, you can find a deal at, you know, a lot of these. You know. Like Detailed Image or Autoality, I'm sure Car Supplies Warehouse, Auto Geek,
Detailing.com.
Yeah, I mean, you can get them, you know, at some pretty decent, you know, discounted prices or you know, whatever, and they're not too crazy. You know, you kind of get like the membership, you know, deal or whatever. Mm. You know, and it's you know, then you're only paying $7, $8, $9, $10 a pad, maybe $12 at most. I mean, it's not too crazy. Yeah.
It's not too bad. There are plenty of pads out there that are going to be within that sort of range. And if you go through a company in Australia and you get trade pricing, you can probably get those blue STOs for $8, $9, $10, probably around there somewhere. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, I'm not. Everyone's got to make some money, but it's just when people get greedy. But I have to admit, like, I've always been someone that goes, you know, think bigger. And if I was to start today, if I could, I won't, but basically I would be, and let's say, for example, I had myself in a shop and I had a few other guys doing mobile stuff in vans. I'd be buying 1,000-liter containers of some of the chemicals that are probably $2,500 to buy, to can them into 20-liter containers for the vans and your other things, and then going, okay, let's get all the pads in bulk. We'll buy the white ones and white foam and blue foam, maybe the green one-step foam from the guys in Europe. At somewhere between 1.9 and 2.8 euro. By the time they come over here, they're probably like $5, $6, $7 at most. And, you know, buy 1,000 of them and basically think bigger. You know, like that's how I see it. But not everyone's got the money for that. But yeah, more people need to think bigger.
Yeah.
You know,
well, let's jump into our last ad break. We'll be right back.
Sure, man.
What's happening, Detail Solutions Podcast? Ian here from Auto Fiber. I've got a special discount for our Towel of the Month Club. TOTM25 will get you 25% off of the Towel of the Month Club. And in the Towel of the Month Club, pretty much you sign up, pay for a year, and every month we're going to send you a different sample of a different type of towel or applicator. So it's a good way, different samples, and try different types of our products. So use TOTM25 at checkout for 25% off.
Man, he has as much enthusiasm as your fucking commercial. Jesus. Man, thank God you don't play those on at the same time on one episode, man.
Yeah.
God. Wait, what are you talking about? Which one?
The one you did yesterday.
Oh, the Manscaped?
The 3, 2, 1.
All right, well, we can redo the Manscaped one and you can do the countdown. How about that?
I never said I was going to be better at it, though.
All right, then. Shut up.
Yeah. All right, so I want to get into something here, and I know it's only vehicle washing, so it matters. It does matter, but it's not like, you know, rocket science, or, you know, people should always do it the way they want to do something, the way they like it, and if you like it, fine. But basically, I mean, these days I'm probably 90% rinseless only. But yes, there's a time and place for soap, and I'm not really into snow foaming and all that sort of stuff, but there is a time and place for it on wheels and wheel art, tires and tires and all that really is nice. And if you're a really muddy car, fair enough, it'll make a difference. But not just that, but I'm actually amazed that this industry hasn't fully embraced zero bucket washing methods. And what I mean by that is you still got a pressure washer. You may foam the car, you may not foam the car with a Cannon, but you basically don't use a bucket, period, with soap.
I don't use buckets.
Like
buckets either.
I might get ridiculed, but I do it exactly.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I do it. Do you it don't like do Maddie, shit. I do it like Maddie says. Yeah. I foam it and then I wet my mitt or my towel or whatever I'm using, and then I just go to town and I refoam where needed.
Yes,
I rinse my mitt or my microfiber towel or whatever out as needed.
No grit separators, no need for that. But there's a guy I've known for over 20 years. He's a very smart man. He's got been detailing for a long time, mostly with a rotary only. He's a whiz with a rotary. And he came up with the zero bucket wash method. People have probably seen it on YouTube over the years. Back in 06, he was doing it where, you know, you can be pre-soaking, whatever else, high pressure rinsing, whatever. And then he would just get his wash mitt. He'll have the soap at a much higher concentration ratio because he basically said that if you put 100 mil or even less in a 20 liter bucket or even 11 liter bucket, you haven't got enough suspension or lubrication. So he's just gone, okay, line of soap, rub it around, spray or in a spray bottle and just glides it, turns it over to the other side, another panel, high pressure rinses the mitt off the car basically. So you're showering it, you're not bathing it in a bucket, which the second bucket can't do that much, which is why to me the two bucket method is basically obsolete and should be just abolished ages ago. you know, even one bucket with like 10 mitts or several mitts, which people don't like, but it's fast. Is better than two bucket. So you're showering it, and then you just keep going. Or you can, you can high pressure rinse it, or you can. What I would do usually is spray, get the rinseless wash, whether it's no rinse or the 914 or the Absolute, if I ever do get that, and just spray the whole car dry. It's dry with that, and just pre-soak it with the pump spray thing. Wait, and then high pressure it, and then just go to town with the shampoo or foam it and do that, or just go straight to the shampoo. But like it amazes me. Like, and look, everyone's got to do things the way they like. And if they like it that way and they love foaming, go to town, like Ivan says, you know, go to town. But, you know, the time it takes to have clean buckets, you know, you've got buckets, you use it to clean them. Then the time it spends to fill them and get the foaming going, all that, you know, you're pretty much done two or three panels by that point without buckets and all that stuff. So I just wanted to mention that anyway. But pretty much, as I said, as the years went by, been working on some new ideas, different machines. Obviously, there's one of them that's already been sent to the R&D team from a manufacturer. I said, I haven't got the money to make it myself or design it myself and come up with schematic drawings or whatever, and I can't make it and I haven't got the money for it. So there you go. Have that one. It's the least of the two. The other one I've got is massively revolutionary. Have some idea how it would work for as a polishing machine. Right. But again, I'm not going to share it. It's going to stay with me until something can happen. If it doesn't, fine. I'm just somebody that's very, very passionate about this industry. And even if I'm now sort of in the point where I'm like, I'm almost retired from it, I still tinker. I still look at stuff. I still talk to people. And I just love it. And I just wish it would just, you know, not just grow, but actually just be just the way everyone gets along. Just, right. I think America is getting a lot better at actually like people getting along and networking, and you've got more events than we ever would have here. Yeah. But I just want it to, you know, people to leave their ego at the door and basically just it will be united for a common purpose. And even if we don't all get along 100% and we use different liquids and don't like this and that, just be civil. You know,
yeah,
and think bigger.
It's getting better at that. Honestly,
yeah. I mean, if you just turn it off, if you just turn off the noise and stay out of the certain groups or stay out of the certain chats or whatever, it definitely gets better. But the minute that you get sucked into that negativity. Like I always say negativity, you know, I mean,
like fucking quicksand.
Right. It's not my saying, but yeah, you know, like negativity breeds negativity. And that's what I always try to tell people, especially, you know, our good friend here, Jason, who, you know, has a tendency sometimes of, you know, letting his
my mouth get ahead of me.
I've been there myself. I mean, there's been times on Autopia and other places that have been very opinionated, and you know, I've certainly got myself in trouble a few times, but there was one time on Facebook I mentioned something, like I said, oh, like Australia, my mentor says it, but some other people say it, that Australia used to be a dumping ground for stuff that didn't cut it in the UK and America and other places.
Right.
Now, not necessarily always the case, but there's plenty of good stuff out here. But yeah, definitely. Almost some people seem like it's a dumping ground for stuff, for crap. And I said, oh, another range of stuff from the US coming over here, people buying or trying to sell. And some of the American detailers and even some of the high end people that are very high up in the industry sort of gave me a hard time on Facebook. And I just decided that, okay, look, if I've upset anyone, I'll go on and I'll actually do a video. And I will apologize on video and for my statement or whatever, if I've pissed anyone off, whatever else. And they were like, man, you're a stand-up guy. Cool, man. They left me alone after that because I was happy enough to go, I fucked up, you know, whatever. If I have fucked up, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. Not that I'm always a people pleaser. I used to be, but now I realize you can't please everyone. And even the best people, like my hero, you know, Bruce Lee, piss people off and ruffled feathers and whatever else. Yeah. But certainly I mean well. But sometimes I do, you know, it happens. But as I've gotten off of 99% or 99.9% of the detailing groups, and I'm only on a new one that's an Australian one for pros only, and if you screw up more than once or twice, you're basically kicked down immediately. And Paint Assassins, I go and have a look sometimes and post occasionally. Like, that's it. I'm not getting involved in any others because there's some other ones out there that, you've got potential of all sorts of problems. So... Yeah. And I'm not saying that I know everything. I have still got plenty to learn, I'm sure. I'm sure finally got a chance to catch up with Jason Rose and Kevin Brown and some of these other guys I know, I'd learn heaps of stuff. I might share some good knowledge to them, but I'll learn tons more still yet. But it's not like I go on a lot of places and I go, gee, I didn't know that. Like, there are some things you pick up, but there's not a lot. So there's still plenty to learn, I think, but not to the point where I can be on a forum and I go, well, yeah, I'm really learning a lot here. So, but yeah, right. I'll pick up things, but yeah. It's been a journey, mate.
Yeah. Well, listen, before we get too long with this, I do want to give one of the reasons why Jason jumped on is because Jason does want to ask you a question. So I want to give Jason the opportunity to ask you a question. And then when Jason's done, then I'll ask you my exit question that I've been asking everybody so far.
Okie dokie.
So there was a recent Facebook post that I seen, and I wouldn't call it jealous, but I was just like envious. I was like, damn, that's awesome. It was your video game collection, dude.
Oh yeah.
Like, can you talk about that a little bit? And do you like still play video games, or you just collect them?
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, actually, retro, video games and movies and video formats are my first love before detailing. That started in the late 77, 78 when we got a Hanamex like Pong console thing that had like a gun and seven games, and it was mostly Pong games, but you could shoot at the screen. Then I got an Intellivision, which I still have, and I just got into gaming, got into Commodore 64s and 128D, which I still got. And yeah, like I don't have a ton. I've got friends, like my friend John from Canada that's coming tonight, and another friend who've got stacks and stacks. There's one guy, James, he must have every version of Mega Drive ever released on the planet, basically. And he's got pinballs, arcades, probably like 70 or 80 or 100 consoles, the original boxes for those consoles, games for those consoles. It's mind-blowing. But, yeah, I absolutely love video games. Do I live on them and use them as much as I used to? No, but I'm basically 1978 to 2013 is basically where I go. So Xbox 360, even Forza Motorsport 4 is as late as I go.
Man, so you don't even have no new gens, do you?
Nah, I mean, I like them, but I'm not going to buy any. I'm happy to stick with that. I'm happy with my 128D and my Mega Drive and Master System and my Intellivision and the PS1, the PS2, PS3.
Dude, the PS1's a classic, man.
Oh, dude, love that intro too when it starts up.
I love the PS1, dude.
Yeah.
Yes, dude.
With the NTSC mod so I could play Gran Turismo, a copy of Gran Turismo 2 that I didn't have at the time that was from the US. Someone copied. And I've got an Xbox first gen, which has got about 15,000 games on it. And I just got an arcade stick recently for it.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's got all the arcade games on it. It's going to die eventually. Power supply is starting to be a bit of a pain. And a couple of the games that are on there that have got like all the different consoles have shit themselves. But there's a place called Game Fix here in Adelaide that fixes up my 360s and my Xboxes whenever I need to. I love that stuff. Oh, you can. He's got machines hanging around, whatever else. So one day it'll become hard for a lot of this stuff. But my other love, of course.
You ever gonna sell any of your stuff?
Nah,
or are you just gonna collect?
Never. No, I'm pretty much collecting. I just got the racing instruction set for the Commodore 64 recently because I've been playing that game for 30 years and. Basically, it's just like, well, I never had an original copy. It was going fairly cheap in the UK, and I said, okay, I'll grab that. It's pretty rare. But yeah, I my main thing is I love that, but also I love Betamax and Laserdisc and VHS. So I've still got a couple of Sony Betamax players. One of them is a Super Beta Hi-Fi, so basically they're a version of Super VHS, a bit better, where the VHS tape comes, the Beta tape comes out. On like a tray, slides out like a CD thing and lifts up, and you put the tape in, and it goes.
Yeah,
does that? And those machines are still going, probably $1,000 today if you can get one.
Wow.
And I've got 5 LaserDisc players, and I had 3,500 VHS movies originally, but I've sold 3,000 of them because there was a bunch I never watched. Some I've watched a few times. I said, I want my stuff face out on display as much as possible, so I'm going to piss off all these while everyone's paying good money for them, and just keep what really matters.
Nice, that's awesome. All right, Maddie. So the last question is the question that I started asking everybody to end out the episode is: when did you realize your worth?
Probably a bit later than it should have, but probably around about 20, probably after 20, probably even after 2012, 13, really. I figured for years that everyone's doing detailing that I was doing, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah.
I figured that everyone in Adelaide's doing what I'm doing. They're doing 3-step rotary and DA. And everyone's doing this high-end sort of work. But then I realized most of them weren't eventually. But everyone's like all doing that sort of thing. So why am I any different? Why am I any, you know? And there's people that are faster than me. There's people that are probably smarter than me in different areas. I'm a pretty humble guy, easygoing. But, probably 13, 14, I started to go, hang on a minute. I had my best friend actually – he started – I was very quite negative. Back in, like, late 90s, early 2000s, I was very negative about myself. And when I had my first AU Falcon, I got my AU XR now for 18, 19 years, but the first one I had, I rocked up to it, to the Falcon Car Club meeting back in 2000 when I was just still doing a little bit of hand polishing, and I'd hand polish the car, and a little bit of rotary, and – met this guy Jason at the car club, and he goes, man, your car is gleaming, you know, it's this galaxy blue, rich blue color, looks amazing. I'm like, yeah, but it's got this problem and that problem and that problem, and it looks shit, I don't like it. And he took me to a car show like shortly after that, and he showed me these supposedly car show cars, and they were scratched to bejesus and hologrammed, all sorts of stuff, and there was some nice ones there, but most of them were just covered in swirls. There was one red Corvette that literally the whole front looked, you know, so flat it was almost like oxidized, and it blew my mind. And I thought, my car's actually decent, but and he's been talking to me for years, and I've never let it get to my head and become egotistical or I'm fucking awesome. You know, right. It's never gotten to my head. No one, you know, no matter what anyone says, even what my friend Alex these days says, from Brisbane, how I'm, you know, he's looked at some of the training stuff I've done for like a rotary class that could be divided into four different levels because it's so in depth. He goes, man, you're bloody articulate. Now, I've never thought about that, but I just thought, well, I'm good here, but I'm shit there. But right. Yeah, like Jason's been talking to me for years. Like, yeah, you're smarter than you think you are. And I don't let it get to my head, but I've realized over the last several, at least 8 years, 9 years, that, yeah, I'm worth a bit. I've got some knowledge and some skill that I want to pass on. And, I've got to charge correctly, you know.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, it's
awesome. It's a good answer.
It's been a lot later than it should have been, but
right.
It's just how it is.
Yeah.
You know, so, and again, I mean, I haven't gone to SEMA and met people. I don't go to all these big shows. I could probably afford to do it now, but, you know, and in scheme of things, I'm just this guy that wasn't that really successful business-wise and making $500,000 to $1 million a year doing a detail, having a detail facility. So I don't consider myself sort of like, you know, the upper echelon or big name in the industry, but I'm probably just known because of just all this sort of my skills with the machine, with all the different machines, my knowledge of all the machines and intricate stuff that my chemistry / company director mentor has taught me and what I've learned off of a lot of other people anyway. I don't see myself as some big name.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like I said earlier in the episode. I mean, you know, I mean, I still don't know everybody. So when I heard you on Dale's podcast that first time, and then we started talking, and then I started, you know, I'd talk to this person and say, yeah, you're gonna get Maddie on. Oh, Maddie's a great guy. Like, yeah, I know Maddie, you know. And I was like, oh, you know, and it's like the more and more people, like, I was like, wow, like Maddie's really, like, has a, you know, a good I don't want to say following, but like a, you know, a lot of people know of them or whatever, and it's,
yeah, it's staggering, you know, to me. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, again, because I didn't really know of you until then, so I was like, wow,
fair enough.
You know, how did I not know this? You know, these people, I know these people, and they know you. Like, how's the, you know, 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon?
Yeah.
You know, not, you know, kind of.
It is staggering, though. Like, I mean, to the fact that people still want me to come on a podcast shows now when I'm not even doing detailing for money.
Yeah.
It's staggering. And it's the fact that I've been gone from this sort of, like, you know, fat farm kid from, you know, a part of Australia, well, 35 kilometers north of Adelaide or so, that's basically, you know, just this kid on a farm that sort of loves his video games, to somebody that pretty much Michael Stoops from Maguire's knows, Jason Rose knows, Dylan, all these people all over the place know, sometimes because I've just bugged people for years, ringing up companies. I love emailing and talking to companies. Like, I talk to, or at least email quite often, a lot of these phone manufacturers.
Right.
And I'm still looking now for some new ones to see what they've got, see what's out there that I haven't seen before. I'm always looking for the next thing, and I love innovation, and it's not always easy, and innovation's expensive, and, you know, you've got to have more detailers buying in larger quantity and buying the high quality stuff to make it worthwhile, because it seems like everyone who buys in bulk, which is most of the dealerships, want the cheapest shit they can get. So why would you want to innovate anything? But I just love the technical aspect of it and the innovation. And it's like the detailing industry and its people and doing polishing and all the stuff, to me, is how I feel about it is how Bruce Lee felt about his martial arts and fitness. That's how far it goes.
Right.
Like, that's the level I'm at. Like, that's how much I give a shit.
Right, right. No, that's awesome. So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Matt, you got a birthday to go enjoy.
Yeah.
You spent an hour 20 almost talking with us bums over here in the past. You know, so I appreciate you doing this. Thanks for, you know, staying on me, you know, and keeping me updated with all your health, you know, stuff that, you know,
yeah, it's not always fun.
This happened, I'm glad that we finally got to do it. You know, it's like I said before, you know, the podcast will always be here, you just get better. So I'm glad that we finally got around to do it. And yeah, go enjoy your birthday, man. You know,
absolutely. But as I said, one other thing I'll say is that, you know, like, I do want to definitely do some training stuff, classes with people. Probably only 4 or 5 at a time. That's the thing. And it's going to take a while for me to set this all up. And it's not going to be something like I'm going to turn into Liam Callis or in Australia who's a trainer or, you know, doing training to the level that Rupes does or anything like that, because I haven't got the setup and all that sort of stuff. But I'm still interested in doing it, even if it's a once every few months or whatever else, anyone's keen to learn more. Because I just feel I've got a reasonable amount of knowledge and some in-depth stuff that I go into with the technical aspect of foams and pads and liquids and all that stuff that I think a lot of people need to sort of be beneficial for them to know. I mean, talking about compression load deflection ratios and all this other shit with foam is not going to be interesting to most people. It doesn't really matter to them because they don't really need to know that stuff to actually work on cars. But that's how in-depth technical I look at stuff and go. So, you know. Anyway, thank you very much for the opportunity. Like I said, it still blows me away that I've actually get invited to go on podcast when I consider myself this little, this guy that's made a contribution to the industry that's not really, you know, Jason Rose, Rennie Dorr, other people area, but I appreciate it.
Everybody's got a story, and that's what our podcast is. It's storytelling. We want to hear people's story.
That's it.
You know, and somebody somewhere is going to, you know, they're going to be able to you know, hear your story, and it's gonna, you know, not reflect, but it's going to be, you know, they'll be like, hey, I can, you know, understand that, or I'm kind of like that, or, you know, these things. Mm. So that's the thing, is to just kind of bring the industry together and just kind of, you know, make everybody understand that we're all the same. It doesn't matter if you're a Jason Rose or a Rennie Doyle or, you know, an Alex Russell and a Jason Bruno, you know, there's no levels. We're just all here. As the great Noxie said, there's no levels. So man.
Yeah, that's it, man. And there is no best of anything.
Right.
People, all that.
Exactly. So, cool, man. So I appreciate you for coming on, man. Again, happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Go enjoy your day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, bud. Thanks, all right, guys. Cheers.
Take care. All right, bye. All right, man. So, Maddie
Gibb.
Yeah.
Is that our third Australian that we've had on this year?
That is our third Australian. Yeah.
Australia has been, it's been a good year for Australia and us in 2022.
You know, the cool thing too, let me see, let me pull this up live on the podcast here, is I believe Australia now is third in our audience. As far as
US, as UK,
it's US, UK, and then Australia. It's not gonna pull up now for some reason. And then Canada,
Canada,
yeah, our top four, and then Germany's five, if I remember correctly.
Germany.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's cool that. You know, I think back to, you know, when Cam Watson had messaged me and he had, you know, heard of the podcast and started listening to some of them. And I was like, holy shit, got to get you on. And then, you know, and then it clicked to Cam Scorey. And then it's to, you know, Dale messaging me. And he was talking about starting a podcast and kind of picked my brain a little bit. And then, you know, said, hey, I finally did it. You know, please listen to it. And the first episode was Maddie, you know, and I was like, wow, this is, you know, and this guy's got a lot of knowledge. And, you know, so then me and Maddie started talking. So, yeah, I mean, we got to get Dale on here too, eventually, to kind of round it all out. But no, it's cool talking to the Australian guys. It's a little weird trying to figure out the time difference, you know, because they're so far ahead and then daylight savings time makes it weird, but, you know, we make it happen. Yeah. It's all that matters. So, all right, buddy. Well, if you don't have anything else to say, man, it's getting late here on a Friday night for me.
We're 2 weeks away from MTE, people.
2 weeks away from
MTE. Make sure you get your tickets.
Get your tickets.
What's the code, Alex?
DSP15.
And you get 50% off, all right?
15% off. That's so, right. Make sure you come see us at the Detailers Roadmap
booth. Detailers Roadmap booth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I should start knowing the booth number. Because you know, people are always like, "Oh, come see us, booth number, blah 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 blah."
Man, just look for the sign that says "Detail is Roadmap" and look for us in the fucking corner.
Two chuckleheads. Two chuckleheads sitting 10 feet away from the cool guys.
Yeah, dude, you'll see us. We'll have our own fucking table that has the logos and shit on it too.
Yep.
We're gonna be fancy, like.
Yeah, we fancy. We fancy.
We fancy.
We fancy. All right, everybody. You guys have a good night.
Have a good night.
Good whatever it is when you're listening to this. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.